Welcome back to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly recap of the precious metals markets and the markets closely associated that sometimes even move those metals markets. And not much movement.
Yeah, I was saying not this week they didn't.
Yeah, that's right. I guess we've had a little bit of movement in some markets, but not our market.
Right.
Miles, do you even want to participate this week? Is there anything to show?
No, I've got some other stuff I could be doing, so I'll catch you guys next week.
Flat line on the chart?
Yeah, let's call it subtle. Yeah, subtle this week. A lot of ones. Platinum with a slightly bigger number, but most everything is pretty flat across the board. So yeah, let's kick our lines off with gold. Gold's flat line is actually down about 1% from last week from our recording at $3,015. At time of recording this week. Silver, pretty much dead even. We've been up or down 0.5%, but we're currently sitting at about $33.75. Coincidentally, silver did seem to peak out and bottom out a couple days prior to gold, so they not moving lockstep with each other, and that has pushed that gold-silver ratio back down a couple points, just with gold being down a little bit more than silver on a day-to-day basis. But ultimately, seeing both of the metals kind of moving simultaneously with each other. Platinum did actually take a decent decline this week, about 3.5%, down back under $1,000, just really seems to be treading water around that $1,000 mark. So we're down to $965. And with that, palladium, the sister metal, inches back up about 1% to $964. I could have said $965 for both just to make it fun that they were the same price, but they're not. And I like to be specific. Moving over to the S&P, you know, the S&P coming off like a 10 or 11% decline. It did bounce back up this past week, about 1.2% to 56.66. And the dollar index with a pretty decent move up, even though it's also 1%. You know, when you're talking the largest currency to ever exist, a 1% move in a week is a pretty significant move for the dollar index. It did bounce 1% up and is currently sitting at 1.104.5, excuse me. So realistically, in our markets, other than maybe, you know, good old Dr. Copper, which we definitely wanted to talk about this week, other than Dr. Copper, everything seems pretty flat.
Yeah, Dr. Copper is very interesting. I think it's going to help silver when silver pushes back into the $35 range. You want to unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, copper coming into a new highest price ever Tuesday overnight into Wednesday morning. Copper did push up to about 5.322, which puts us at an intraday overnight highest price ever, which we're still above the previous highs from May of last year at about 5.16. So we had a nice little run up in copper and then immediately turned back down. I don't know if we're looking at profit taking, because we are looking at copper taking a pretty significant jump up over the last week or so. You know, we go back to, say, just Monday. Let's just go back a couple days. You're looking at almost 6% move in copper, 5.8% there. And if we go back to, say, the beginning of last week, Monday of last week, you're looking at an over 10% move in copper now over the last 10 days. So copper has definitely been on a tear. One of the most common industrial metals, and it's the reason we call it Dr. Copper. It does tend to lead some of the other industrial resources and the precious metals to some extent. So while gold had certainly a pretty, let's call it significant 12 months, I think we're now a little over 50% in the last 12, 13 months. With gold having a pretty significant move up, it's nice to see some of the other industrials moving as well. The downside to that, of course, is copper being more expensive makes everything more expensive. So what do you guys think? Is this an omen of things to come?
You took the question right out of my mouth. I was going to throw you guys under the bus and ask you that.
Nope, your turn to talk.
You know, is this an inflation expectation response or is this a reality, you know, of inflation? Because median inflation expectations have increased now to 5.1% from 4.7%. And I think some of that is just due to this massive tariff discussion and push, if you will, because that goes hand in hand with consumer confidence. So we have consumer confidence and expectations down.
Yeah, and I'd like to unpack that a little bit. Can you keep going with that?
Sure. I mean, 94 was expected from a consumer confidence standpoint, and it dropped down to 92.9, which is down from 100, right, the previous month. So that's the lowest level now that we've been since January of 2021, which was COVID response. And so that's showing kind of a negative outlook. And that really marries to the expectations index, which is at 65.2, which is down almost 10 points. So these are major moves down in the confidence, but that's the lowest level in 12 years. And every time it's gotten this low, it's been a sign of recession looming. So I think that's part of it. But this copper price doesn't match that.
No. And, you know, the popularity, Trump's approval rating continues to be very strong. So I have to question this sudden drop in consumer confidence while people looking at the White House are, by and large, pretty happy with what they see. So I question the numbers on consumer confidence a little bit. Not that I have anything to add to that. It just seems like an interesting offset. It just doesn't correlate in my mind.
Well, the outlook is worst for those 55 and older, but 35 and up really has a negative outlook, and investors under 35 have a positive outlook. So you're actually seeing a demographic split here on those expectations, and I think a lot of it has to do with the source of the news is going to be a theory that I'm going to throw out there, because quite honestly, okay, manufacturing numbers are actually looking better.
Yeah.
Right?
Very much better.
You've got some inflationary numbers coming down. You've actually got some deflation, like in eggs. Gas and oil, obviously, are coming down moderately.
Yeah.
So that's saving people money. But what it'll do is it'll freeze the spending. It'll freeze the consumer in terms of certainly large purchases, with hoping maybe that there's going to be a price drop or that time's going to get tough. And you've got a lot of labor market strain with government layoffs.
True.
And so you've got sort of a contracture there where people aren't going to have the same disposable income. But all of that is actually good for inflation. So I don't know why inflation expectations are climbing. Now, again, these aren't real numbers. These are just expectations based on polling. So you're right, Rob. I mean, sometimes it's just not going to match the real numbers. So we have to work off of data. And I'll tell you, Wall Street invests off data. They don't invest necessarily off confidence. I mean, there's ways to do that, just like there is off volatility. But to me, it's about the government spending, the debt and deficits, hiring. You know, we've got all these things going on that are creating uncertainty. And more than anything, it's the uncertainty that's driving it. And that certainly is going to lend some strength in the gold price as well, that uncertainty.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this so-called detox period.
Yeah, Treasury Secretary Bessent has said that we need to expect a detox period. I think that the whole country has expected that. As soon as the election results were in, you had to know that if campaign promises were followed through with, then there's going to be a tightening of the belt. And you guys, you got to remember, I mean, the sheer magnitude of jobs created by government hiring in the last 4 years skewed the labor market numbers. They skewed recessionary numbers just by changing definitions. We've been in a recession, in my opinion, and in an unavoidable deepening recession, that's okay. And then when you tighten government spending on top of the labor market contraction with these government layoffs, yeah, you're going to have a detox period. But as Morgan Lewis mentioned in our meeting, you're only detoxing because of a prior intox.
And I thought that was going back decades.
Oh, every crisis. I mean, many decades.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is that intoxing? I mean, every time we've had a financial crisis, it was looked upon as if we didn't do everything possible, then we were going to have a worsening crisis. So everything has been unsustainable. The path that we've been on has been completely unsustainable. And so, yes, there has to be a detox. We've talked about the markets, whether it's the equities markets or, you know, certainly the derivatives, real estate. It's all just like a drug addict, right?
Yeah. We've
Banking
made
crisis. That comparison.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everybody gets bailed out, the government, the Fed, the Treasury, all combined to bail out whatever sector is suddenly going to drag us all down. But to your point, it's been unsustainable and it's coming to an end. In fact, when you talk about the Treasury, for instance, the cash balance of the Treasury has averaged around $800 billion for the last year and a half, and it's plunged by almost $480 billion just in a month. And they're looking at a pretty weak Treasury auction today. Just this morning, the five-year auction tailed off not well. And the Congressional Budget Office is saying we reach the run out of money point sometime either August or September, where they draw down all their available cash. There's no more money left. What are we going to do at that point?
No, that's right. And they have to pass a resolution. The House Republicans have already put together a $4.5 trillion budget resolution. So they kicked the can down the road on this debt ceiling issue.
Right.
If they don't raise the debt ceiling, then obviously you're defaulting and we're sitting on over $36 trillion in debt. Well, they're going to pass something. And what they're looking for is $4.5 trillion, and that's going to raise the debt ceiling by $4 trillion. And it's going to be coinciding with the extension of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act by 10 years. But that's not good. I mean, that goes to further currency debasement. Like, that's a lot of money. So the detox isn't going to be that aggressive. It's not like they're taking away all government spending. They're going to tighten it down. They're going to make it more efficient. They're going to redirect it in ways that it was intended to be directed. But the Congressional Budget Office estimates that if that bill passes, it'll add $25 trillion to the national debt over the next 10 years, you guys. I mean, that takes us to $62 trillion. But even without extending it, the CBO predicts the debt's going to hit $52 trillion in the next 10 years. So this isn't stopping. And the drug is still being put into the vein.
Well, and that's all long-term projections. Yep. What's immediate? How much treasuries are going to be hitting the market in the short term?
This year alone, there's about $9 trillion that has to be refinanced at probably 1% higher debt service rate. So 1% more on $1 trillion. And so you have that constraint as well. You're going to see a reduction in tax revenues, potentially. The Atlanta Fed, as Morgan pointed out, is showing some negative GDP numbers right now, because if we really do get this strong economic contraction, remember, that negatively impacts government revenues. So it really could get ugly, and that could be the detox period, and that's okay. It doesn't bother me at all. And consumer sentiment could certainly be negative, but it's going to be mostly negative in the instance that you've been completely dependent upon government grants or funding or income in terms of your pay. That's going to be skewed for those that are experiencing that type of revenue income.
Well, I think that may answer your initial question. Why is there a discrepancy between the consumer sentiment and the presidential approval rating? Is maybe it's a public acceptance that you have to rip the Band-Aid off. Maybe I'm wrong, but there could be a piece of that, is accepting that in order to make some of these progressive steps forward that you want to, you have to accept the punishment for the things that we've already done. I don't know if that historically rings accurate, because generally groups of people tend to just be sort of short-term angry about what's affecting them, or maybe we haven't reached a level yet where people are responding to it negatively quite yet and starting to point the finger. But ultimately, you know, I'm hearing both answers there. Like, we're talking about the potential steps forward that some of the policies can benefit from. But on the same breath, we're not really looking into the debt issue and the negligence of government overspending as aggressively as I think a lot of us would like when we're talking about taking $36 trillion to $50 or $60 trillion over the next 10 years. That doesn't really sound like austerity to me.
That's right. Well, and to your point on the demographic, I mean, what's the big money saying? Like, look at the indices, the stock indices.
Oh, the big money's buying gold.
Well, the big money's buying gold, but they're also buying the Dow Jones Industrial Average, right? But look at the Dow Jones. I mean, that's the best. Why is it the best? It's because of Trump's industrial policies.
Yeah.
So if a whole index is saying, hey, we're actually kind of bullish here on this, well, then others will follow suit. It may not be tech and it may not be nonprofit intensive organizations or climate sector and that sort of thing. There's going to be bear markets in certain sectors while there's bull markets in others. And it's going to take time. You guys, this is a reckoning. This is a washing out. We're just beginning. But the whole thesis for owning physical gold is playing out before our eyes. I mean, Rob, the things that you've talked about for decades and that Don McIlvaney wrote about in his newsletter for decades, it's here and now. It's happening live. And it's fascinating.
It is to us. And my point is that the average consumer doesn't even see what we're talking about yet. They have not absorbed it yet. They have not come to grips with the fact that $9 trillion has to be refied short term, and we can only raise maybe another $4.5 trillion on the debt ceiling. There's an offset here coming. And I think the reason why you, Tory, are personally not concerned about the numbers we are looking at is because...
I own gold.
Amen.
Well, fellas, I think that's going to do it this week. So as always, to you out there listening, we appreciate you stopping by and joining us each week for Golden Rule Radio. If you'd like to check out some more information online, you can certainly find us on our website. That is McIlvaney.com. We're also on Twitter at ICA Gold and Facebook at McIlvaney Financial. And as always, if you'd like to discuss your personal portfolio with one of the advisors here at McIlvaney Precious Metals, you can reach us at 1-800-525-9556. Hope you have a great week. Look forward to speaking to you next week.